the best in the world. They were both growing old, and it was not easy for either of them. Nicholas had always made it clear that he had no intention of becoming a ceremonial golfer like his friend and rival, Arnold Palmer. Arnie never lost his joy for the game, even after he stopped winning. He would buddy up to sponsors and chat with people in the galleries, and smile for anyone with a camera. He enjoyed that stuff. Nicholas did not. A reporter at the 1994 Masters started to say, "Jack, you have never missed a cut at the Masters," and, "Really?" Nicholas growled, interrupting. "That's where we are? That's what we're talking about? We're talking about making cuts now?" He was 54 years old, but still sure of himself. "If I didn't think I could win, I wouldn't be here. I didn't come here to make the cut." As it turns out, Nicholas did not make the cut at the Masters that year, and later in the year he missed cuts at the Open Championship and the PGA Championship. His game was fading. It was something he could talk about with Watson. When Watson went into the last day of the Memorial with the lead, Nicholas felt a few of his old competitive juices flowing. Watson faced an exacting 4-foot putt early in the round, exactly the sort of putt that had tormented him for a decade. "Come on, Tom," Nicholas said quietly. Watson knocked it in. He made a 20-foot putt for birdie at the 13th, and with a one-shot lead on the 18th green, he made a downhill 12-footer to win by two. Then Watson walked over to his old friend, who was standing on the fringe, and they embraced. "I couldn't be happier for anyone," Nicholas said. "I couldn't be happier." "Thank you, my friend," Watson replied. They saw each other more often as the years went along. Watson turned 50 and joined the senior tour. Nicholas, who was already 60, still played a few senior tournaments. They played Turnberry together as old men at the 2003 Senior British Open. Reporters asked what they remembered most about the duel in the sun. "I don't remember anything," Nicholas said. "That's what you keep on saying," responded Watson. "See? You lie like a rug." At the time, the young Tiger Woods was dominating the game like no one, not even Nicholas, ever had. Woods won 4 major championships in a row. He passed Watson on the PGA Tour victory list before he turned 30, and not long after passed Nicholas, too. No other golfer seemed able to challenge him. At Turnberry, Nicholas was asked if golf could use another rivalry like Nicholas Watson. He answered in Nicholas' understatement, "Couldn't hurt." Woods was often the topic of discussion when Watson and Nicholas got together. Both marveled at his brilliant game, his Watson-like hunger to win, his Nicklausian ability to conjure up a breathtaking shot at precisely the moment he needed it. After Nicholas played a couple of rounds with the young Woods, he predicted Woods would win more Masters than Arnold and me combined. Palmer and Nicholas won 10 Masters between them. When Watson was asked if Woods' great success would continue, he responded, "Well, he's the best driver of the ball, the best iron player, the best around the greens. He has the best imagination. He's in the best shape. He's the best pressure player, and he putts the ball better than anybody. So, yeah, I think he will probably keep winning." Privately, though, they stewed about how other golfers capitulated to Woods' will. They seemed content to cash the enormous second- and third-place checks that Woods' popularity generated. Sometimes that private grumbling spilled into the media. In 2002, Watson invited Palmer, Player, Trevino, and Nicholas to his annual Kansas City charity event supporting Children's Mercy Hospital. The group was asked if they would like to be younger so they could face Woods. "You bet your ass I would," Palmer said. "The golfers today give up," was Player's response. Watson said, "I would love to try and beat that kid when I was a kid." "Tiger has them all buffaloed," Nicholas said, shaking his head. "If you don't believe you can win, you won't win." We believed. There were tough times. Bruce Edwards, Watson's caddy and friend for the better part of 30 years, called him one day and said, "I made a quadruple bogey." That was his way of saying that he had been diagnosed with ALS. "We'll beat it," Watson insisted. And for the next year, they fought the disease together. Edwards carried Watson's bag for as long as he had the strength. Watson played more than he had in years, first to spend more time with Edwards and then to raise awareness about ALS. He was in constant motion as he tried to help his friend find a cure. Edwards died on the first day of the 2004 Masters. Watson played that day because he knew that's what Edwards would have wanted. After the round, he said, "I felt like Bruce was with me." Watson worked hard to rebuild his relationship with his father. He and Ray were so alike, stubborn, proud, conservative, the very cliché of men's men, and yet there was tension between them. Ray's heavy drinking had embarrassed Tom. At one point, he forbade his father from attending his golf matches. Tom's drinking later in life and his public criticism of the Kansas City Country Club had driven the wedge deeper. Over the years, though, Ray quit drinking. Tom quit drinking. The two men worked through their differences. "My father," Watson said in an unusually open moment, "is not an easy man. I never felt like anything I did was good enough. I'm sure that's a big reason why I became a champion. He is responsible for everything I achieved. But it hasn't been easy." Father and son were in Hawaii for a golf tournament when Ray died of a heart attack. Tom was on the putting green when he found out. He told reporters, "Dad taught me the game. He didn't just teach me how to play. He taught me etiquette, too. He said to me, 'Here's where you stand. You don't stand behind people. You keep quiet when somebody's trying to hit.' He loved the game. He gave me that love." There were other relationships to mend. Watson's 25-year marriage with Linda ended in a grueling divorce, putting distance between him and his two children, Meg and Michael. Slowly, they came back together. Watson was as stubborn and difficult and principled as he'd ever been, but he developed a softer edge. He quit drinking. It was great to see a guy who had that problem, whose father had that problem, finally face it and fix it, Nicholas says. I was proud of him. Nicholas dealt with his own pain, none of it more heart-wrenching than in 2005, when his 17-month-old grandson Jake drowned in a hot tub. Jake was the grandson who hugged like he would never let go. "The hardest part is watching your children suffer," Nicholas said. "It's a double whammy for a grandparent. That's just not supposed to happen." When it happened, Nicholas never wanted to play golf again. His son Steve felt differently. Golf, especially for his father, was too important to stop playing. Then one day, Watson called up Nicholas and asked if he and Steve would like to play in the senior event in Kansas City. A special exemption had been given for Steve to play. "You want to play in Kansas City?" Nicholas asked his son. "Sure, I'd love to play." They went to Kansas City, and they stayed with Watson on his farm. They fished a lot, and the two great rivals talked. Not so much about their tournaments together or the sadness they endured or the feelings about getting older. They just talked. "We've known each other for so long," Nicholas said, "that a lot can just go unspoken." A couple of weeks later, Nicholas played his final Open Championship. It was, fittingly, at St. Andrews, the birthplace of golf, the place where he had taken off his yellow sweater, a place that meant the world to him. He was paired with Watson for his last round. It could not have been any other way. When the pair reached the 18th hole on Friday, it was clear that Nicholas would not make the cut. Watson had a chance if he played a solid hole. They both hit their tee shots into the fairway and walked toward the green. Nicholas looked into the crowd and smiled. Watson, so famously unsentimental, began to cry. "Stop crying, Tom," Nicholas ordered. "You still have some golf to play." Watson nodded, and they kept walking. Watson did make his putt, and he made the cut. Then he left the stage to Nicholas, who faced a 14-foot putt. He stalked it like the Nicholas of old. "It didn't really matter," he recalled. "I knew wherever I hit it, the hole would move." The ball rolled in and the Scottish crowd went mad one last time. Nicholas gave a small smile and Watson felt tears building in his eyes again. "There," Watson said out loud, "is the greatest golfer who ever lived." The Secret. Love the bad bounces. I asked him, "Tom, how do you win 5 British Opens?" He gave a little pause and said, "I love bad bounces." I looked at him kind of funny, and he said, "It was really clear to me when I looked around at other golfers that, you know, you can't handle bad bounces." "But I can." Johnny Miller. The most compelling part of Watson's golf career is locked up in that word, love. He learned not only to accept the bad bounces, but against logic, to love them. He learned not only to endure, but to love the rain and wind. "Bad bounces are part of golf," he says. "If you don't accept that..." "Right," I say. "But you do more than accept that. You love it." "Well, it's a challenge," Watson acknowledges. "I've always loved a challenge." There's a classic Twilight Zone episode in which, after a degenerate gambler dies, he finds himself in the afterlife, checked into a beautiful hotel. His closet overflows with perfectly fitted suits. Women find him irresistible, and he cannot lose any game he plays. Every time he spins the slot machine, it comes up sevens. When he plays roulette, his number hits. He can't stop getting blackjack. After some weeks of this, he's utterly bored, and he screams at the man he presumes is his guardian angel, that he doesn't belong in heaven. "Whatever gave you the idea this is heaven?" the man replies. "This is the other place." This is a theme Watson can relate to. Golf on sunny, windless days, those heavenly days for the rest of us, stopped appealing to him long ago. He wants to try shots he's never had to hit before. He wants to escape inescapable traps. He wants to face the sorts of predicaments that test his patience and his imagination and his resolve. He was always good at handling difficult conditions. He had a toughness that other golfers lacked. Watson and Nicholas and Tiger Woods and pretty much every great golfer through the years wants to face difficult conditions because he believes in his ability to overcome them. "Come on, Watson," he will say to himself in the howling wind or in foot-high rough. "Let's see if you're as good as you think you are." Obviously, it is a lot easier to love the bad bounces when you have Watson's game, but he thinks there's something in there for weekend golfers. "The best part of playing golf," he says, "is hitting great shots. And what gives you the opportunity to hit your greatest shots? Getting in some trouble." "I was the kind of golfer who did not like bad breaks," Johnny Miller admits. "I think most golfers are like that. Tom was just different that way." Hole number 17. Watson heard a clear voice in his head when he returned to Turnberry for the Open Championship the last time. "You can win this one, Watson," the voice said. That voice had never left him. It was there in the early years when he was unable to finish off tournaments. It was there during the glory years. It was there during the slump. And it was there as he grew old. The voice surfaced every time he had a good practice session and spoke most clearly when he returned to a golf course where he had won a big tournament. The voice was not very realistic. Watson was 59 when he returned to Turnberry in 2009. He'd had his hip replaced only a few months earlier. He had not won a major championship in 25 years. "You can win this one, Watson," the voice in his head repeated. It had been 32 years since the duel in the sun. 32 long years, and even the eternal Turnberry had reluctantly changed. The Turnberry of 1977 could not support 2009 golf. Golf clubs were so much more powerful. Golf balls soared higher and farther. Like all the grand old courses, Turnberry had to be stretched and pulled and reconfigured, like a house that has been outgrown. Underneath, of course, this was still Turnberry, still that beautiful stretch of land by the Firth of Clyde on the west coast of Scotland. There were secrets in the dunes, riddles in the wind, mysteries that Watson alone understood. "There's a spirit there that you have to experience to understand," said the mogul Donald Trump, who eventually would buy Turnberry. "There's something about Turnberry that is ancient, something that only people who live there truly understand. Tom understands it, too. No 59-year-old could win an Open Championship. Everybody knew that. The oldest man ever to win an Open Championship was old Tom Morris, and he was just 46. The idea of Watson winning at 59 was ludicrous. Jack and Barbara Nicholas were watching the golf coverage from Turnberry when they saw Watson with his caddy, Neil Oxman. Their pairing was fitting. It was Oxman who, 36 years earlier, had suggested that his good friend, Bruce Edwards, go talk to that unknown golfer who looked like Huck Finn. Edwards had died 5 years earlier, and Oxman and Watson missed him terribly. When they were together, they felt a little of his spirit. "Look," Barbara said as she pointed at the television. Jack squinted and saw what caught her attention. Oxman was wearing a Nicholas Golden Bear hat. It was a sign. They had to text Watson. "Tom," Barbara wrote, "we love Ox's hat." "It made us pay attention from the start," Nicholas remembers. Watson's first round at Turnberry in 2009 was like a dream in all those wonderful and unsettling ways of dreams. The wind was still. The course was defenseless. Every shot felt true. Every putt curled toward the hole. On the first, Watson hit a brilliant 9-iron to 12 feet and made birdie. On the third, his 20-foot birdie putt dropped to put him 2 under par. Oxman remembered thinking, "Hey, what's happening here?" "You endure a lot of rough days," Watson would say, "so that every now and then you can have a good day." On the 10th hole, his gorgeous 6-iron shot settled 3 feet from the hole. He made that birdie to go 3 under par. On the 12th hole, he rolled in a 14-footer to go 4 under par. On the 17th, he made it 5 under with an easy birdie. Each of these holes was like an old friend. At the end, all of Scotland seemed to be buzzing. Watson finished the day 1 shot off the lead. It was, Oxman would say, a perfect round of golf. If anything, it was too perfect. Watson had led the U.S. Open after 1 round, just months before Bruce died. He had a couple of good rounds at the Masters long after anyone saw him as a contender. But this round was different. This round was perfect. And perfect rounds, like sweet dreams, end abruptly when morning comes. In the sports writing business, Watson's brilliant first round is called a one-day story, as in, you better write about Tom Watson today because he won't be a story tomorrow. "Can you keep doing this?" Watson was asked. "Who knows?" he replied. "Why not?" Nicholas felt an unfamiliar jolt of excitement as he watched Watson play. It was unfamiliar because he rarely watched golf on television for more than a couple of minutes at a time. Other people playing just didn't interest him much. He never did like sitting still. He wanted to be flying somewhere for business, playing doubles tennis on his local Florida court, doing something with his family. But Watson contending at Turnberry fascinated him. Barbara asked if Watson could keep it up. "Maybe," he answered. "He knows that course better than anyone. The key will be his putting." Then Nicholas remembered his last great run. That was at Augusta when he was 58. He made a charge on Sunday and moved all the way to the lead, though in time the other golfers caught him. It boggled everyone's mind except his own. In his own mind, he should have won that tournament. "He can do this," Nicholas decided. "But tomorrow will be harder than today." The second day began for Watson as Nicholas thought it might. The wind, so calm and friendly the day before, rushed in from the Firth. Watson made birdie on the first hole. On the second hole, though, he hit his drive into heavy rough and made bogey. And it no longer felt like a dream. Watson hit his second shot into a bunker on the fourth hole and made bogey. On the fifth, his drive died in the wind, and he made another bogey. On the sixth, his ball rolled into another bunker. Another bogey. On the seventh hole, he hit his second shot into the rough. He made bogey again. The huge crowd still milled behind him, but what they had hoped would feel like time travel instead had become that familiar and melancholy story of a man growing old. A few people began to break away to find a happier story. Then something unexpected happened. Watson was playing with Sergio Garcia, one of golf's more emotional players. Garcia had wondrous talent. When he first came on tour, his touch around the greens and ability to hit brilliant shots when in trouble reminded observers of the young Tom Watson. But he felt jinxed. Every missed putt was a sign of doom. Every bad bounce convinced him that the golfing gods were against him. "This doesn't happen to other golfers," he moaned in those moments when things went bad. Watson, who liked Garcia, wished he could convince the young man that he was talented and blessed. Now, though, Garcia was watching Watson's game deteriorate. And he spoke up. "Come on, old man," he shouted. "You can do this. You're driving the ball well. You can do this." After that, Oxman saw a noticeable shift in Watson's demeanor. He smiled that hard smile. On the ninth hole, he hit his second shot 20 feet from the flag. He looked the putt over quickly and then cracked the ball toward the hole. The putt dropped. He raised his arms to the cheering crowd. He had life yet. Watson made another 20-footer for birdie at the 11th. Rain began to fall, and he hit perhaps his worst shot of the back nine on the 16th hole, a 7-iron that flew over the green and settled some 70 feet away from the cup, setting up a very difficult 2-putt. Watson made it in 1. "Oh my gosh," Nicholas yelled in Florida. Then came the 18th hole, and Watson, improbably, was just 1 shot off the lead. His second shot barely rolled on the green. It was 55 feet from the hole. "I think Bruce is with us today," he said, and Oxman began to cry. Watson felt the tears in his own eyes, and people in the gallery who didn't even hear what Watson had said were crying too. The putt was a nasty twister, another difficult two-putt. Watson was not thinking about two-putts, though. He knocked in the crazy putt and walked off the green to the sound of impossible cheers. His name was at the top of the leaderboard. "It's your job, guys, to write the stories," he told reporters after his round. "My job is to make them." Nicholas was bouncing around the house. He could barely contain his excitement. Reporters wanted a statement. He sent one. Hopefully he will forget his age and remember that he's Tom Watson, and Tom Watson knows how to finish. Then he asked Barbara to send a text to Watson. Jack had no idea how to text. He was not especially interested in new technologies. He'd been lobbying the golf industry for years to go back to golf balls that didn't fly quite so far. Still, he had something to say to Watson. Barbara sent the first text. "Everybody's going to be giving you their best shot. You know that reference. But I know you can take it." The best shot reference was to the duel in the sun. When it ended, Nicholas had said, "I'm tired of giving it my best shot and not having it be good enough." "What did getting that text mean to me?" Watson asks. "It meant everything, especially because I know that Jack doesn't know how to text." The wind at Turnberry shifted for the third round, and Nicholas settled into his chair to watch. "Nobody's going to score well," he told Barbara. "All Tom has to do is shoot even par, and he will be leading this tournament at the end of the day." Watson was thinking along the same lines. The conditions were tough, and no golfer would be able to make up much ground if Watson played solid golf. So that's what he did. He teetered a little bit on the back nine, but then made back-to-back birdies on the 16th and 17th to finish with a 1-over-par 71. He was alone in the lead. Jack and Barbara cried during the round. Jack asked Barbara to send one more text. "Win one for us old guys and make us all cry again." The final day at Turnberry was a whirlwind of brilliant shots, poor shots, comebacks, tension, exactly what Nicholas knew would happen. "The thing Tom will realize is that the golf course is not easy," he told reporters. "No matter what everybody else does tomorrow, they will make mistakes. He will too. His advantage is he knows that." The course was a severe test. A 15-to-20-mile-per-hour wind blew unpredictably. Watson lost his lead on the first hole, where he hit into a bunker and made bogey. A 29-year-old British golfer named Ross Fisher, who was carrying a beeper because his wife was due to deliver their child at any moment, made birdie to take a one-shot lead. The day would test all of them. Watson hit his drive into the rough on the second hole, but salvaged par. On the third, which was playing downwind, he did not follow one of his golf commandments, overestimate the wind, and hit his shot over the green. He made his second bogey and fell down the leaderboard. But Nicholas was right. Watson's advantage was that he knew this would be a long and hard day. He could not win the tournament with a single shot. He also could not lose it that way. Fisher had a disaster at the fifth hole and fell out of the lead. He was replaced at the top by another British golfer, Lee Westwood, who made an eagle on the seventh hole. Many viewed Westwood as the best golfer never to have won a major championship. All the while, Watson felt calm. This was how the day had to go. There would be multiple leaders, ups and downs, and he simply had to stay steady. He made a birdie on the seventh hole to pull within a shot of Westwood. He bogeyed the ninth hole to fall back two shots. Westwood bogeyed, and the lead was won again. In Florida, Nicholas could not take his eyes off the television. The day was going just as he hoped. The leaderboard was turning and twisting. Now, a 30-something Australian named Matthew Goggin worked his way to the top, but it did not matter. All of the other golfers would have to face a kind of turbulence that they had never felt before. There is nothing quite like being in contention for the first time at a major championship. Watson knew that feeling. He'd grown accustomed to it. When he birdied the 11th hole to move into a share of the lead, Nicholas nodded. On the next hole, Watson's drive hit a woman in the crowd and ricocheted into the rough. He signed a golf glove for the woman, hit the ball onto the edge of the green, and saved his par. Nicklaus nodded again. It is not quite right to say that the years melted off Tom Watson that afternoon in Scotland. He looked more or less his age. The wrinkles obscured the Tom Sawyer looks that writers once celebrated. Though he walked without a limp, the hip replacement slowed him down, and more than anything, he kept leaving his putts short. He once rapped his putts harder than anyone. Now he was not as sure. He was, in all ways, a man nearing 60, and this was what made it all so wonderful. When Watson made a bogey on the 14th hole, his 10-foot par putt slipping by the right side, he again fell behind by a shot. Then, almost immediately, Westwood bogeyed, and they were tied. Everyone was making mistakes, Watson later said. It was just as Nicklaus had foreseen. At the 16th hole, Watson faced what seemed the pivotal moment of the day, a tricky 4-foot putt for par. This was precisely the distance that had wrecked the latter part of his career. As a young man, he had knocked in 4-foot putts without even thinking about them. At 59, making this 4-foot putt seemed as easy as jumping over a canyon. He stood over the putt for the longest time while the people in the gallery, seeing his struggle, prayed for him. "Come on, Tom," Jack and Barbara Nicklaus urged back home. Watson made the putt, and it felt like the cheers were coming from around the world. He raced to the par 5, 17th, the hole called Lang Wak, where he had finally taken the lead from Nicklaus in the duel in the sun. He hit his drive into the rough. He hit a second shot over the green. He putted the ball back up to within a few inches of the hole, and then he made birdie. He led by one. To win the Open Championship, he needed only a par on the 18th, a hole that had been renamed Duel in the Sun to commemorate what he and Nicklaus had done as younger men. Already, people were trying to put the story in perspective. Had there ever been anything like this in golf? No. How about in other sports? A 45-year-old George Foreman had become heavyweight champion. A 59-year-old Satchel Paige had pitched 3 good innings in a Major League Baseball game. Martina Navratilova won the Wimbledon mixed doubles title at 46. The answer, obviously, was no. There had never been anything quite like this. Watson stepped to the 18th tee and hit a magnificent drive that rolled over the plaque in the ground that commemorated where his 1977 drive had landed. His ball was in perfect position, 189 yards from the flag. Golf fans around the world felt the tears forming in their eyes. Watson, though, saw clearly. "I'm thinking 8-iron," Oxman suggested. "So am I," Watson agreed. Watson wanted to hit his shot 164 yards. This would land the ball in the front of the green, and after the roll, leave him with an easy 2-putt to win the championship. To hit a shot 164 yards under normal circumstances, he would have used a 7 or 8-iron. But these weren't normal circumstances. The words of his English caddy Alfie Files echoed from 1977. "The way your adrenaline's pumping, mister," Files had said as he handed Watson a 7-iron during the duel in the sun, 2 clubs less than he normally would hit. Oxman later said that he would regret giving Watson that 8-iron for the rest of his life, but that came later. Watson hit his shot pure, and with the ball in the air, he thought, despite himself, "I'm going to win the Open Championship." The ball looked gorgeous in the air. It hit the front of the green, bounced forward, and rolled fast. It rolled over the green into the fringe. "Oh, no," Nicklaus shouted as he watched on television. "That shot was 6 inches away from being perfect." Watson reached the green and saw that the ball was resting against a collar of grass. He had a choice to make. One of the great chippers in golf history, he could chip the ball. If he did, he would have a good shot of knocking it right next to the hole for an easy par and the Open victory. Then again, if he flubbed that chip, he might find himself right back in the same spot. His second option was to putt the ball. He had just successfully putted from off the green at the 17th hole. The advantage of putting was safety. He was not going to flub a putt. The disadvantage was distance control. he'd have a harder time getting the ball close. In this moment, Watson asked himself, what would Jack do? Well, he decided, there was no question about that. Nicholas would putt the ball. There's an old saying in golf that Nicholas believed, your worst putt will always be better than your worst chip. Watson had to give himself at least a chance to win the golf tournament. So he putted, but not especially well. The ball rolled by and meandered to 8 feet from the hole. On television, the broadcaster and Watson's close friend Andy North told America, I think he's going to make this. That was North's heart talking. Watson's body language suggested he did not know how to make the putt. He walked around and studied it. As he stood over the ball unsteadily, his pant legs fluttered in the wind. The young Watson would have wrapped his putt at the hole with all the confidence in the world. The old Watson hit the ball tentatively. The young Watson would have made the putt or sent it rolling 3 feet by the cup. The old Watson left it short and right and nowhere near the hole. All around the world, a groan went up at once. Watson's bogey dropped him into a playoff with Stuart Sink. Although he put on a brave face, he was spent. For 4 days, he had fought back the years, and now, all at once, he felt his age. He did not put up much of a fight in the playoff. Sink won it easily, and Watson, at age 59, finished second at the Open Championship. That in itself was remarkable, but it was not the ending anyone wanted. Afterward, Watson was surrounded by a distressed and miserable-looking press corps. Hey, guys, he said, it's not a funeral. Back in Florida, Jack and Barbara sat on the couch and felt empty. Heartbroken, Nicholas later described the moment. Heartbroken for Tom. Watson put on a strong face, but deep down he too was heartbroken. In time, the Watson story would shift from a tearjerker to an inspiration. Look how close he had come. People on every continent wrote heartfelt letters to him. People in their 50s and 60s and older wrote that he had given them hope. Others wrote that Sink may have won the tournament, but Watson had won a piece of immortality. No one would ever forget how he played at Turnberry the last time. Watson, though, did not want to hear any of that. He still saw things through a Midwesterner's eyes. Bottom line, he said, I lost the Open. He played over the final sequence in his mind again and again. Should he have had a 9-iron instead of an 8? Maybe so. Should he have found a way to settle himself better before hitting that crucial final putt? Perhaps. More than anything, he asked himself if he should have chipped that ball that went over the green. These were the thoughts raging through his mind as he sat in his hotel room in the minutes after he lost. That's when the phone rang. I don't want to talk to anyone, he told his wife, Hillary. But it was Nicholas, so Watson picked up the phone. Tom, Nicholas said, I did something today that I have never done before. I watched a whole golf tournament on television. Thanks, Jack. You know, you won the golf tournament, Tom. Watson shook his head. What are you talking about? I didn't win the tournament. You beat everyone in the field, Nicholas insisted. No, I didn't. Well, okay, you tied one. Nicholas thought this might make Watson laugh. It did not. Yeah, Watson said, and I lost to him in a playoff. He knew what Nicholas was trying to do, but it wasn't helping. He felt his anger with himself growing again. Tom, Nicholas continued softly, you made us proud. How many 59-year-olds lead the Open Championship after 2 rounds? One, Watson. You. How many lead after 3 rounds? Only you, Watson. Only you. How many lead after 4 rounds? You. Watson didn't reply. He just stared out the window into the Scottish countryside. You know, Tom, you played the 18th hole beautifully. You hit a perfect drive. You got unlucky on the second shot. And then you did the right thing, putting that third shot. That was the right shot. Watson perked up. Was it? Yes, that was the right shot. With a putter, you weren't going to lose the golf tournament. You might not win it, but you were not going to lose it. You chip there, you're bringing double bogey into play, and you have a chance to lose right there. Well, Watson said, I'm glad you said that, but I goosed it. Yes, Nicholas agreed. and so would everybody else. Watson let out a small laugh. I see it like this, Tom. With a chance to win the Open Championship, you hit a perfect drive. You hit a perfect second shot. You hit a smart third shot. And then, well, then you hit the putt just like any of us old guys would. This time Watson laughed harder. Later he said, I still felt terrible, but I was beginning to come out of it. Jack had done something for me. I was thinking a lot about that third shot, that putt. Should I have chipped it? When the smartest golfer who ever lived tells you that you hit the right shot, that meant a lot to me. It still means a lot to me. When Nicholas was told that, he smiled. Well, it was the right shot. You don't put yourself in position to lose. If you do that, you have a good shot of winning. It doesn't always work out, but that's your best shot. The Secret. Chase the Secret. Every golfer has his own secret. Tom Watson. There isn't a secret to golf, of course, but no real player believes that. Jack Nicklaus. The worst thing that can happen to any golfer is to lose hope. One lousy round follows another. Shots hook into the woods or slice into the water time after time. Putts from 3 feet away skid short of the hole or roll 5 feet by. At some point, the golfer starts to think that it will never get better. The promise of a new golf club or the next lesson fades. This is the time many golfers quit. Nicklaus believes that this is precisely the time when golfers can play their best. Golf is probably the easiest game in the world to quit at, but it's also the greatest game not to quit at. Why is that, I ask? Because when you conquer the game again, when you hit good shots again, golf is an even greater game than it was before. Watson agrees. The secret, he says, is not one thing. All those lessons, all those ideas, they're all secrets. Golf has millions of them, and they change day after day. He chased the secret when he was playing well, and he chased the secret when he was playing lousy. He chased the secret when he was young and impetuous and somewhat liberal-minded. He chased the secret when he was older and hardened and staunchly conservative. He chased the secret so that he could beat his father. And he chased the secret when his father was gone. He chased the secret when he played Nicklaus at Turnberry as a young man, and when he played Turnberry as an old man. The chase has marked Watson's life. He admits to making many mistakes, on the golf course and off, but he never stopped trying to find the secret. That's what he's most proud of in his game. There were times when I thought, I'm never going to find it, he says. Those are the tough times. The key is to keep going. Keep searching. The secret is out there. I'd say it's out there for every golfer. You just have to keep looking for it. Hole number 18. The most disappointing golf tournament of Watson's life was not, as you might think, when he lost a sink in a playoff at the 2009 Open Championship. It happened at the same place, Turnberry, but it occurred 15 years earlier when he lost the Open Championship to Nick Price. A look at the final scores would not suggest that Watson was close to beating Price. He shot a 74 on the final day and finished in 11th place. But what the scores did not show was that Watson hit the ball better than anyone that week. In truth, he may have hit the ball better that week than he ever had in his life. This was just a couple of months after he had found his secret, just a couple of months after he had fixed the arc of his swing. All week he hit the ball exactly where he aimed. If he wanted to turn the ball left to right, he turned it left to right. If he wanted to move the ball right to left, he did that. He hit the ball high when he needed that shot, and he hit it low when that was required. After three rounds, he was a shot off the lead, even though he had missed, by his own estimation, at least 10 putts he should have made. He missed 2 3-footers just on the back nine on Saturday. If he had made those, he would have had the lead to himself. Hiccups, he called those missed putts after the round. Those damned hiccups. He told the press that he wanted the wind to blow hard in the final round. With a howling wind, the tournament might come down to the player who hit the ball the best rather than the best putter. but the wind did not blow at all on Sunday, so the tournament came down to the player who putted the best. That was Nick Price. Watson still had a share of the lead as his back nine began, but then it all fell apart. He made back-to-back double bogeys when he badly missed two very short putts. When it ended, Watson was inconsolable. He asked the question Ben Hogan had often asked in his later years. What use was it to hit the ball so well if he could not make any putts? What hope did he have of winning if the ball wouldn't go in the hole? He went to his hotel room and sulked. The phone rang. It was Nicholas. Come on, let's go get some dinner. Nope, Watson said. I wouldn't be much company. Come on, get out of that room. Let's get some food. No, Watson said. I can't. And he hung up the phone. A few minutes later, Nicholas's phone rang. Okay, Watson said. You're right. I'll meet you in the restaurant. The four of them, Jack and Barbara, Tom and Linda, met in the dining room. They ate dinner and drank wine and told stories. They laughed a lot, especially Watson. The sun stays out late into the evening in Scotland that time of year, and he looked out the window and then looked at Nicholas with a funny expression. Come on, he said. Let's go play the pitch and putt. Next to the Elsa Craig course at Turnberry was a lovely little par 3 golf course. It overlooked Elsa Craig and the Firth and the countryside of Scotland. The four of them staggered out to the course and played golf as the sun was setting in the distance. They played as husband and wife teams and continued to play even after the sun was gone and it was dark all around them. Uh-oh, Nicholas said. Tom's got a 5-footer. No chance he makes this. Watson growled and made the putt. See how well you putt when you can't see the hole? Nicholas teased. You jerk, Watson responded, but he was laughing. They were all laughing, and in a life of wonderful shots and terrible ones, big victories and tough defeats, duels in the sun and the rain, they would both think of this as one of the happiest moments in their lives. What is the secret of golf? Well, as Hogan said, you have to dig it out of the dirt. George Brown, the Turnberry golf course manager, lived in a house across the street. He heard laughter and went to see what the ruckus was. He gingerly approached the four trespassers playing golf in the dark. Watson saw Brown first. He turned to Nicholas. Hey, Jack, he said as he pointed at the approaching man. Why don't you take care of this?
The Secret of Golf, the story of Tom Watson and Jack Nicklaus, was written by Joe Posnanski and read by George Newbern. Editing and post-production by Fenn Eichner. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Secret of Golf is available in print from Simon & Schuster. Also by Joe Posnanski from Simon & Schuster Audio, Paterno, read by Joe Montagna.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.